Welcome to Finding Your Identity, the podcast about helping you find your identity. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity. I'm Derek McKinney, and this is episode 21. And I think it's important for you to remember this episode. And I think it's important for you to remember this episode because it's about cars. Fancy cars. This episode is about memory. I'm just kidding. And I just lost a bunch of people. Great. Anyways, for those who care to learn about memory, and more specifically, how you can use your memory to rule the world, then you should stick around and listen to this episode of Finding Your Identity. Because I think memory is probably one of my favorite things. And the reason why it's one of my favorite things is because it's this thing that, you know, is inside of you, that like it's in your brain. I mean, your brain is a magnificent thing, but it's this thing that you can develop, that you can train, that you can use to your advantage, that you can set yourself up for success with, and it's yours. And it's, you know, it's one of these things that really defines you as a individual human being. And I think that's why I really like it. And I always like to test myself and train myself to remember things the best I can. And I try to commit things to memory when they're important. And, you know, the main reason is because it's such a powerful tool in your brain arsenal. You know, I mean, it's something that you can actually leverage in a lot of situations, and I think it's just great. Now, it's kind of interesting that I did an episode before about sleep, and this kind of ties together with that because it is required. Sleep is required in order to make memories. So, you know, as I will kind of get into that a little bit more. But if you haven't listened to the Anatomy of Sleep episode that I recorded a couple episodes ago, you should go back and listen to that one. I think it's a good episode. And it also has some very fun and interesting facts about lucid dreaming, which is kind of cool. Unrelated to memory, but related to sleep. But I think, you know, it's important to remember that a lot of things that have to do with your general health and well-being has to do with, you know, sleep. And so this is kind of another thing that kind of builds on that whole concept. So I think it's important, you know, to understand how memory works, because it's definitely going to help you if you understand how it works and then how you can improve it. So, you know, we'll kind of start off with the first part, just going through what it is and how it works. And then we'll kind of jump into some of the more fun things about how to train yourself in to strengthen your memory. Now, the way that we create memories is by experiencing some kind of event. So you'll, you know, walk into a room and it's a surprise party, right? And so everybody jumps out and they're screaming and, you know, your blood starts boiling because you hate surprise parties, but you're remaining cool, but your heart's beating a little bit faster, and you're thinking, you know, I'm going to kill the person who threw this party for me, but I'll do that later because I want to eat cake first. So this event happens, and you know, your brain starts kind of firing and signals are sent in particular patterns, you know, that essentially are kind of like writing. I like to think of it as like a dot matrix printer. This is my brain, where it's like, you know, making that sound. It's inside your head, where it's, you know, just kind of writing to that, you know, hippocampus area of your brain. If you remember, that was part of the sleep episode, The Anatomy of Sleep. But, you know, it's basically, it's creating connections, and it's, you know, it's what it's doing is it's prepping itself to consolidate, you know, as this next phase, you know, and it's, you know, recording in a sense, like the details in kind of an image pattern, you know, in an image onto your brain as it's recording it. And, you know, what it's doing is it's kind of like getting it ready to be consolidated. So that consolidating process, which is happening during sleep, you know, is where it's actually being processed. And, you know, it's during that period of time when it needs to be processed and then stored, essentially. And while you're sleeping, your brain is recreating that same pattern of brain activity to, you know, strengthen the synapses, as they say, the you know, mechanism that it needs to go through in order to actually, you know, write it to memory. And it's kind of funny because if you think of how computers work, there's short-term memory and there's long-term memory. So your computer has RAM, and it also has a hard drive, right, which is ROM. And so you do something on the computer, like you're in a word processing program, and you type, hello, my name is so-and-so, and then you delete it, and you go, no, my name is not so-and-so, it's Derek. Why do I keep writing so-and-so like it's my name? So you write that, and then you got to actually, you know, hit the save button. You got to take a step. So it's kind of like your brain does this automatically, but it's hitting the save button is then storing it. So before hitting the save button, though, it was actually stored still because it was still on the screen, you know. It wasn't saved to long-term memory. So you got to imagine there's that creating the memory, which is like typing out the phrase, and it's blinking, and you get the little asterisks up on the top of the program. And, you know, that's that point where you're this in-between state, but it's not until you go to sleep or you hit the save button in the program that it actually stores it and it puts it in a location. You put it into My Documents, My Crazy Stories, you know, you've put it into those folders, and now it's saved and it's in a more permanent location. So that's my little analogy for how memories are kind of converted into memories. It sounds as redundant, but, you know, it's an interesting process. I mean, it's kind of a miracle to think that all this stuff happens automatically and your brain's just processing stuff. So the fact that you don't have to, you know, plug in a USB drive into the side of your head and then flip a switch, or you don't have to go and, you know, write some code to make it work. Like, it just happens. It's pretty amazing. So, you know, that's kind of one of the miracles, I guess, of being alive. So, you know, once it's kind of been consolidated, now you have memory. So it's funny because I was looking at a couple articles and I was just, you know, reading through different places, just kind of looking up and seeing how people kind of word things about making memories or storing memories. And, you know, one one thing was saying it's consolidated, you know, consolidating memory. Another thing was called encoding, you know, calling it encoding, you know, the process of, you know, memory begins at the point that you like acquire it, but then it needs to kind of be encoded. And that's that whole thing. So it's just another way of kind of talking about how your brain is kind of writing it to itself. What's interesting, though, is there's kind of these different facets of encoding, because, you know, you're not just capturing it as an image, you know, you're actually capturing the sounds that are there, you know, there's smells, there's, you know, colors there, you know, so you have the visual aspect of it. So there's a lot of things that actually go into actually encoding this memory. And it's funny how you can actually smell something and it'll actually trigger something to help you remember something that happened. You know, like maybe one time you and your friend as teenagers, early teens, like 13, 14, maybe you and your friend acquired some lighters at a fair because, you know, or carnival, because the carnies were just collecting quarters and didn't really pay much attention to the two kids who seemed to come back to this one bulldozer coin machine. That's how I'm kind of describing it, where you put a quarter in and then it slides forward, and you get enough of them stacked up just right, it pushes a bunch more quarters down, but also there's prizes on top of those quarters. And there happened to be a bunch of lighters that were stacked in that machine that got pushed out. So it was a fun activity to go to this carnival / festival and, you know, blow $10 on getting lighters, because you couldn't, you know, otherwise we couldn't just walk into a store and buy lighters. That was crazy. We were only like 13 or 14 years old, but we could win them at the carnival for spending $10. And so we'd get lighters, tons of lighters. Like, we would just collect a bunch of lighters. And then you take those lighters and you go and you light little fires, you know, thinking, so cool, we made fire just like the cavemen, you know. And it was always little things, like a piece of paper, you know, or a little patch of dry grass. But then you're like, well, I wonder if, what if I go up to this bush that has, you know, some needles that are kind of dead a little bit. Maybe it'll be flammable. And so you break off a branch and you light it, and you get that smell of like pine, that's kind of burnt pine sap, you know, smell kind of trickles off of it, but it goes up so quick and you just think that's just so amazing. And so you think, wow, I want a bigger branch. And then you start to get lazy and you think, well, what if I bend this branch down and I just light it, you know, and then it'll just kind of go up and then go out. And then I don't have to go through the process of bending it back and forth to try to break the branch off. But the branch goes up so fast that it gets so hot that you let go of the branch. And the branch snaps back and it catches the entire bush on fire. And then you've got the smell. That's a real smell of fire and fear burning. Because this bush happens to be right next to the side of the garage of this friend that I don't know who these people are, but I'm just thinking that might have been what happened. And so then this bush is going up in flames and you're panicking and you've got that sense of smell triggering, because you could smell the fire, and then you wish you could smell water because that would be useful at that point. And you know, your friend panics and runs in the house and comes back out with a glass of water and throws it at it, which does nothing. And then goes and runs in and comes out with a pitcher of water, which does nothing. And then runs in and runs out of the garage with a hose that's just not long enough. And you're just kind of standing there panicking and saying, well, what are we going to do? I mean, I'm assuming. But you could just smell that fire burning a memory into your brain, because you're never going to forget how terrifying that was. And that terrible stink of that, you know, burning sap, but also of the melting siding of a house. And then you hear screaming because your friend's screaming to do something, but what could you do? But then the neighbor happens to come across the street and he thinks, well, just spray the hose. It doesn't reach, but just angle it until it could put out the fire. And he's your hero. And you remember this guy very clearly. Don't know his name. Don't even remember what house he was in. But I remember this man. You know, he was definitely taller than two of us. And he was just a gleaming, shimmering hero of hope who just came over and saved the day, put out the fire. And that was a memory. That could have been a memory. I don't know. But, you know, it would be a memory. But that smell, the smell of that burnt pine, is something that would stick in your brain forever. And you smell that, and then you could remember potentially a moment like that. So that's just an example, because, you know, the smell factor is such an important factor when it comes to building a memory. Same with sound. You know, there's this, you know, auditory aspect of creating memories. So a song can often trigger a memory. I still hear some songs that will come on the radio if it's, you know, a station that maybe is playing stuff from 2000s or something like that. And I'll hear the song come on and I just go back to thinking of my childhood. I also think of that song that goes something like, back in the day when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore. Some days I wish I was a kid again, something like that. But that song makes me think of my childhood and growing up in my neighborhood, because it just happened to be a song that came out around the time. And it was funny because at the time when I was a kid, I remember hearing that song and thinking of memories that I had had previously in the past couple months or years. And now I listen to it and I think how many years ago that was and how that makes me think back to those times. And I'm glad that they were memories that were made, you know, they were happy times. So there's a couple different features. So I mentioned acoustically, visually. There's, you know, another part of the encoding process, elaborative, where you utilize your knowledge you already possess to retain new data. So, you know, really what that means is you're kind of leaning on stuff that you've already experienced and potentially have already saved to memory through learning, and it kind of builds on a memory. So it's essentially how learning works, right? So maybe you learned basic calculus, right? Which you need to know calculus in order to learn trigonometry. So you basically are having that first experience where you're building those memories and you're learning. Because you got to remember, like, learning is really like pulling in information and getting knowledge, but you have to ultimately remember that knowledge. Otherwise, you didn't learn anything, right? So if you think that, you know, you're building on knowledge like that, or when you're reading and you're reading, you know, say a trilogy of books, in order for you to get what happens in the second of the series, you have to have read the first one and retained the storyline, you know. Same with watching TV shows, you know. So it's really just it's the compounding of a story that you're kind of building on, you know. So memories really require some pre-existing knowledge to kind of expand and grow, but then it kind of gets easier to remember, because, you know, one of the features of being able to remember things is the fact that you, when you remember something, when you think back on it, you're actually strengthening the memory of that thing. And each time you remember it, you're making it even stronger. So it kind of just keeps on building because, you know, every time you basically go to remember something, you're sending that signal, and that signal is kind of writing its path again in your brain. And you're really, you know, just redeveloping that line, let's call it, you know, electrical line that's in your brain, that pathway. And so it's helpful to kind of think back occasionally to remember things, which is why you recite things when you're studying, you know, or why it's a good practice to go back and recite things over and over, like spelling words or, you know, how to complete math problems or whatever it is. And, you know, that's part of what studying is. It's just reciting the same information over and over. So you're building upon the memory of it. So you just keep doing it over and over, and it's making that stronger and stronger. So, you know, I think it's another cool aspect of how brains work, you know. And it's, you know, it's an interesting thing if you kind of sit back and think about it. This is all happening again. I'm fascinated by this, obviously, but again, it's all happening automatically, you know, but you have the power to kind of sit back and strengthen this and to actually do more to kind of help strengthen your memory. So, you know, the next stage of this, of building memories is to kind of build the muscle, right? If you think of like your brain is a muscle, like people have kind of said that before, or is it, maybe that's scientifically what it is, but you know, the fact that you do stuff like Sudoku or crosswords, or I don't know, maybe you do formula problems, formulaic math problems or something. I'm not really sure how you train your brain, but you know, there's even like a brain games, or there's some website, I forget what it's called actually, that lets you kind of do activities to help you strengthen your brain, you know, just kind of keeps you active. Like I like to do solitaire games of solitaire, but not just simple solitaire. There's a game I like, it's actually called Algerian Patience, and it uses 8 decks of cards, or maybe 10 decks of cards, but it's 8 decks of cards. It uses 8 decks of cards, and you're essentially trying to build your solitaire piles from ace to king, but you do the 4 at the top, you're doing king to ace, and then you're doing ace to king and the other 4. So you got, you know, those 8 piles. So you got those 8 decks that you're kind of shuffling out. And as you're laying them down, you can only put them in order by suit, like actually suit and order. So you can only go, you know, ace of hearts, 2 of hearts, 3 of hearts, stuff like that. And the game I have, which is like, I don't know, 200 in 1, maybe it's what's called solitaire games. It just has this game and it's timed. So, you know, it's kind of helping to force you to kind of be quick with it. And so I'm always playing it. And I'll just keep playing this the same game over and over. I just try to beat my time, you know, just try to get it. I think the fastest I've done it was in like 9 minutes, which is hurts my head after. And sometimes I'll just play it for 2 minutes. You know, while I've got a break, and then kind of put it away, come back to it, play for another 2 minutes. Although I found, because you got to rely on your memory a little bit, because you have all these kind of piles in front of you where you're stacking on top of them and you can't just pull from them. You have to use the card that's on the top of the pile, and you've got, I believe it's 6 piles. Plus you have this draw pile, so you don't know what's under there. So it's a ton of cards. I mean, and if you were to, it's a obviously a virtual game. It's pretty easy to do. But if you were to do this in real life, you'd need a ton of cards. Obviously, you'd need like 8 to 10 decks of cards to kind of play this. Well, I guess 8 decks of cards. It's 8 decks of cards. But, you know, you'd need those 8 decks of cards, and you'd need all this space on the table to kind of play this game. But you got that stack, and you know, you can look to see what's underneath, but you can't actually touch it. You know, you can't just pull it out of order. You got to get the top card off first. So like a lot of times you'll get built up to a certain point. You might have 10 or 15 built up and you're like, I need that ace, but it's 10 down and you've only got so many open spots where you can actually move cards. So you got to constantly remember what's the next card that you need to go, you know. So long and short of that long little anecdote was, it's a game that makes you think, forces you to use your memory, forces you to use some logic, and you know, you're trying to figure out the best way to approach the game. And so games like that, you know, are good at trying to help you kind of strengthen your brain and strengthen your memory. So they're often good to do in whenever you have some time. So, you know, I kind of like to lean on that. And I think, you know, it's just fun too. I mean, it's also a way to kind of relax and take your mind off of other things, because you have to be pretty focused on that game if you want to actually succeed. Anyways, so you've encoded, as they say, and now, you know, it's, you know, talking back about the storage thing. So this is, you know, this is that part after consolidation where it's actually being saved during sleep. And, you know, it's really that point where I guess everybody kind of thinks this is where, you know, once it's stored, now it's memory, right? So people just think, okay, well, you know, that's like I made a memory, now it's stored. But there's actually, you know, two types of storing a memory. There's the, you know, short-term memory and long-term memory. And again, this is kind of back to that whole RAM where I said, you know, the computer RAM is that temporary memory, which will actually, you know, store something before you actually took an action to say, I need to save it for a long term. And it's something that you can actually disrupt, you know. So, you know, there's you know, sometimes problems. So if you've ever seen any of those shows, there's one I believe is called Brain Games. I think that's what it's called, but there is a show that they were talking about how people who actually were witnesses to some kind of crime, how they will process a memory and how they will, you know, actually have hard time recalling certain things. You know, when it comes to remembering something like a crime, like, whoa, did you see this person commit the crime? You know, what were they wearing? You know, if it's a matter of having to identify somebody who committed a crime, it's pretty important that you get the details right. And it kind of showed how people can be wrong. You know, witnesses' statements can, or witnesses' accounts can often just be wrong, you know, flat out wrong. They just might be misremembering. And it's not the person's fault necessarily. There's external problems or external, you know, aspects that can throw off that memory. So that could be a problem. And, you know, you have to kind of consider that there's a lot of things that you're consuming or you're ingesting in terms of data and in terms of things you're seeing, hearing, smelling, you know, all your senses are absorbing. And, you know, like there's a lot of that going on. So that being said, you have to consider, you can't keep everything, you know. I mean, it's just impossible to keep everything. So a lot of what short-term memory does is it kind of parses it and decides, you know, what should be saved and what shouldn't be saved. So when you spend more time and you kind of, you know, emphasize in your brain, you know, based off of what you need to try to remember, like you're studying or something like that, or something emotional happens or exciting, you know, your brain is actually saying, hey, this is something I want to retain and I want to send it off to long-term memory. So you do have to kind of consider, since you can't keep everything, that actually has to occur. So that's what your short-term memory is responsible for. And with that short-term memory, if it becomes aware or obvious that your brain needs to store this for long-term, then it's something that, you know, you'll do. Like, for example, names, I think, is probably the best example. If you meet somebody and you are, told their name, you introduce each other and, "Hi, I'm Derek. Hi, I'm Mark." And you hear Mark. It's short-term memory because you need it for that little bit of conversation, right? So you're just kind of having that conversation with Mark, and you just need to be able to recall it just so you can put a face to the name, kind of thing. And you may never be, this may just be an interaction where, okay, I just need to talk to you, Mark, because you're, the salesperson or whatever that, is selling me this thing at the register. I'm sitting at a register and I'm just purchasing this because you're the cashier, right? So thanks, Mark, for ringing me up, If that's how you're introduced, if you introduce yourself to all your cashiers, I guess. But what I'm trying to get at is it's such a brief exchange. You probably don't have any need to remember their name, not to say that you won't or that you shouldn't, but just the fact is it's a quick encounter with somebody. And even people who don't say who they are and you see the name tag, and you see Mark is on the name tag, you identify it as Mark, but it's really short term. Because what if you got to ask Mark a question, or you're going to have to come back and see them because maybe it's a cashier at a photo place, which is probably a foreign concept to some of the younger generation of people. But there used to be a period of time where you had to drop something off. You go into CVS, into the photo development area, and you'd say, "Hi, Mark, I want to get some photos developed." And this is, "Oh, hey, okay, sure." And then you give them the photos, you do whatever to pass them off. And then you have to come back later. And you're like, "All right, thanks, Mark. I'll be back later." And he says, "Make sure you ask for me because I'll be able to show you, how to actually get the USB drive and take it home and get the photos off yourself." So you're like, "Okay, I got to make sure that I remember Mark." So you're saying this in your head. So you leave and you come back an hour later and you don't see anybody there. So you got to go to the front counter or customer service or whatever. And now you need to know Mark's name, because if you don't remember Mark's name, you're going to go, "There was that guy, he had brown hair. He was probably as tall as me, and he said something about a USB drive." You're going to be kind of struggling. But if you were like, "Oh, hey, Mark told me to come back and see him." Hopefully there's only one Mark, maybe more than one, but maybe I was the only Mark working that day. Makes it a lot easier, to actually go and get what you need out of whoever, right? So you can actually say, "Hey, Mark, I gotta, see Mark. Where's Mark?" And you get Mark, he comes out and he's like, "Derek, hey, I got your USB drive. Let me show you how it works," right? Whatever. Car salesman, same thing. You kind of learn their name so that you leave and you come back and you can actually talk to the same person, Mark the car salesman. And I'm going to talk to Mark now, because Mark's been helping me out. Mark's been taking care of me, even though I hate dealerships. And I think Mark is probably trying to scam me out of money. But Mark was cool at the photo place, but not at the dealership. Don't like Mark now. And I'm sorry if your name is Mark, but it was the first name that popped in my head. And I have a cousin named Mark. So I don't know. Maybe that's the association. I didn't know. But needless to say, this is the difference between short-term and long-term memory. It's when you actually need to recall it, and it's important, and somehow your brain can differentiate. More or less, it's probably a good measure to remember names. Try to remember names. There's a book that's actually called How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I actually had made a note of it to mention it, and I'm drawing a blank. What's the guy's name? Dale Carnegie. Yes, he wrote that book. And it's actually a famous book, really well known, and it's probably one of the best-selling self-help books ever. And one of the big things about, one of the big points he makes about remembering names is that's one of the key ways to make a good first impression. And it's actually one of the key ways to make a very bad impression, to have a lasting bad impression. If you don't remember somebody's name or you remember their name wrong, and it can be hard if you can't pronounce the name, but at least you can try to give it a shot and then excuse yourself for saying, I'm sorry, am I saying that wrong? Is that how you say it? You know, and kind of pull it off that way. But, you know, bottom line is, if you can make it a practice to just remember names, you're going to do pretty well in business and in your career and in life in general. So it's kind of a sidebar just about remembering something important. I'd say focus on names. Now, you know, one of the things that helps you kind of remember names is repetition. So this kind of comes into the play with the short-term to long-term memory, because you say the name, you should say the name back. You should repeat the name back when you meet somebody. I say, hi, I'm Derek. Hi, I'm Mark. Hi, Mark. Nice to meet you. You know, now you've actually said Mark out loud. So you've gone the extra step of repeating it. You know, it's like repeating spelling words. It's like repeating math or geography or whatever you're studying, is that repetition. And saying stuff out loud is actually going to be helpful too, because if you think, you know, if you're just reading it, it's that's just one method of consuming and ingesting that data. If you're reading it and you're speaking it out loud, you're reading it, you're speaking it, you're also hearing it. So you've got like the three trifecta of senses going on. So that also will be very helpful in terms of remembering. And, you know, it's kind of a key part of learning. And, you know, it's a technique for people who are learning to study. And it's helpful with retention. So it's kind of another factor. But, you know, mainly it's that introduction with the person. It's the saying it out loud that, you know, you're kind of committing that name to memory, to short-term memory, by just acknowledging it to yourself that this is something important that I need to remember. So, you know, it's also, in terms of winning influence or winning friends and influencing people, I think it's the title. So if you're winning a friend or influencing people, part of it is you're creating an immediate connection with them, right? So you're making them feel comfortable with you because you remember the name. So this is kind of, I've had to commit that name to memory, and now I'm coming back another time and I'm seeing them and I'm saying their name without having to be prompted or reminded. And now they're like, hey, they remembered my name. Like, you immediately think, crap, what was his name? No, you immediately think, okay, this person, you know, is, this person's cool. You know, this person feels a little comforting, safe. They could be a scam artist, but you'll find that out later when you've bought a bunch of fake Bitcoin. But at this moment, you feel nice and warm inside. But one of the tricks now, so there's a trick to remembering things, you know, and this kind of is where it helps to kind of move into the how to improve your memory. But I'll kind of skip to this trick for remembering. You know, it's something that I think it takes practice, you know, in other words. The trick, the magic trick, the magical mentalism technique, one of them, I should say, is mnemonics. And maybe you've heard of this, maybe you haven't. There's also what they say call a mnemonic device. So, you know, mnemonics is this kind of art, but it's a technique for remembering something. So it's where you actually are associating something with something, you know, and, you know, often it's how people kind of remember certain things by kind of tying it with a song, you know, or some kind of phrase. Like, well, I'm trying to remember one, but it's what's coming to mind is "Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally," which I think is the mathematical one, which is parentheses exponents. This is great. "Please excuse my," so it's parentheses, exponents, multiplication, division, addition, subtraction. There, got it. See, even after all this time, because I haven't been in school in like 100 years, it feels like at least 20, and "Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally" is still in my head, and I could still remember back to what that was. That was the order of operations. I don't think I mentioned that. Order of operations was, you know, you should do it in this specific order, and you want to do the "Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally," because you want to take care of the parentheses first, then the exponents, then the multiplication, then the division, addition, subtraction, and you want to do it in that order, and that's how you solve a math problem. But that was a mnemonic device, and I think it's a great example, because I was just forced to do a recall because I didn't look that up and I was trying to do it off the top of my head. And the other one I'm thinking of is Roy G. Biv, which was the colors. I'm not going to say what it is. I want to see if you can answer in the comments. It's probably silly that I wouldn't say it, because you're probably thinking he doesn't know it. But Roy was red, orange, yellow, and then G was green, and Biv was blue, indigo, and violet. Roy G. Biv. I remember it. I was just testing you, but another mnemonic device. So back to the whole concept of it. You know, you could see how in practice how it works, you know, because it simplifies it. You're breaking it down into some kind of pattern, you know, you're associating it, and you're taking a ton of words. You know, parentheses is a long word, and if you're trying to remember the word parentheses and exponents, and you're trying to remember them as the whole word, that's going to be challenging. You know, that's going to definitely be something that makes it hard to remember. But if you're remembering "Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally," which is just silly, you'll then go back and go, well, it was an acronym, and it's, you know, P was what? Oh, parentheses, E, exponents, you know, so you kind of work through it that way. So that's why mnemonic devices work. And, you know, it's also a technique for remembering names. Now, there's also been some things written that say, try to picture a picture, you know, try to create an image in your head for things to remember. So, you know, when it comes to faces, you know, maybe you've met a Mark and you picture Mark Hamill, you know, from Star Wars. Excuse me. Maybe that's one way that you can, you know, remember something about a person. You can actually think that person looked like Mark Hamill. So, or that person was named Mark, and I'm thinking of Mark Hamill. So you could, you know, when you see the person, the picture in your head that you visually can see in your mind's eye would be Mark Hamill. And then you remember that guy's name is Mark, you know, or maybe you're just remembering, you know, the name, or maybe for whatever reason you associate Mark with duck. And so then you picture a duck and you go, duck Mark, that's who it was, you know, that's the guy. So, you know, however you kind of pull that together to make that technique work is however you make it work. Right. So, you know, that being said, it's, you know, it's a lot to do with how you kind of devise your own patterns for remembering and how you utilize that. But that's what mnemonic devices are. Now, I think some of the interesting tidbits that I've kind of learned as I was kind of reading, and one of the interesting things that actually FastCompany.com, I guess the Fast Company magazine, there was a quote about, so they talk about what you shouldn't do in order to kind of enhance memory. And the quote was, you know, contrary to popular belief, you should also quit multitasking. So they kind of were giving a list of things you shouldn't do. And one of them is multitasking, because, you know, attempting to get ahead while, you know, juggling a lot of things at once is actually going to put you behind, because what it could also do is it could cause crosses in the way that things are remembered. So this is back to that whole witnesses, you know, kind of misremembering, you know, the red shirt guy versus the blue shirt guy with the blonde hair and the black hair. You know, the black hair, red shirt, and blue hair and blue shirt was blonde hair kind of thing. But you could get those things crossed if you're not fully paying attention. You know, and another thing that's kind of advice for helping you remember things is to pay attention. If you know something's going to be important, you need to remember, like you're sitting in class or you're in training because your job depends on it, pay attention. Especially don't be caught up during the training on your phone and just ignoring what the teacher's saying or the instructor's saying. You know, pay attention. Put away the gadgets, put away the distractions. You gotta be able to kind of pull it together and focus if you feel it's important, you know, if you find yourself easily distracted, you know, and it makes sense. I mean, come on. You know, it's kind of like trying to do your homework while the TV is on. How well do you think you're going to do your homework versus if you were to just try to do your homework without the TV on? So that's one example, you know, or, you know, trying to read a book just even for fun, even for leisure, trying to read a book. Why would you do that with the TV on? You're going to get things crossed. TV show character ends up in your memory of the book, you know? So like that could be a problem. So you got to kind of consider a lot of things when you're trying to make memories, you know, consider these things, be conscious, I guess is a good way to put it. Now, some of the things that you can actually do to improve your memory, a lot of them are obvious. You know, they're going to say, make sure you get good sleep. You know, that's number one thing. If you start looking up, how do I improve my memory? You know, they're going to say they is the man, you know, the scientists maybe, I don't know. But they, being the Google, is going to say, you should get more sleep or try to get more consistent sleep, you know, just improve your sleep habits, because that's going to be kind of a critical piece of this thing. Because if you're not getting good sleep, then you're going to have problems creating memories, or you're going to have problems with memory loss and stuff like that, you know. And also if you're studying for a test and you didn't get much sleep, and then the next day, and it's like you crammed for 12 hours and then you tried to kind of go out there and actually perform by remembering the answer, you know, not the answers, but remembering what you studied to answer the questions. If you didn't get enough sleep, your brain's going to work a little bit harder. It's going to have to work a lot harder, actually, to try to recall stuff. And you might not do so well. So it's important to get a good night's sleep before a test and, you know, before having to remember something that is crucial that you remember, you know. So that's the obvious one, the sleeping, you know. But other things like exercise, you know, exercising your body is good for a lot of reasons, you know. But keeping a healthy body is also going to help you keep a healthy mind. You know, again, it's something that kind of helps to develop your memory skills. You know, if you're doing kind of exercises that can help coordinate hand-eye coordination, you know, it's going to help to just grow your brain, because that's the other part of it, is you just need to be able to constantly be helping develop your brain and strengthen it, you know, because it is something that needs to be strengthened. So the brain health is important from a exercise perspective, you know, keeping healthy. It's also based off a diet, you know, so eating healthy is also something that is going to help your brain. And there's actually foods that can actually help you, such as fruits and vegetables and omega-3 foods like fish. And you can actually take fish oil pills or omega-3 pills. They're kind of like vitamin E pills or liquid gel cap type things that you can take. And that's supposed to help enhance brain activity and help with memory. So, you know, that's kind of another aspect of doing something to help build out your memory skills. Another thing to do is to learn new skills. So sometimes repetition is obviously needed to help kind of turn short-term memories into long-term memories and to help, and then recalling them. And each time you recall them, it's going to kind of strengthen that memory. But there actually comes a point of what I'd call diminishing returns, where you're just not really gaining anything else from doing something over and over. Like you get really good at doing Sudoku puzzles, and while it's good, you may not actually be gaining anything from it, you know, at a certain point. I mean, it's probably good because it's a good exercise to do, but you might want to consider trying to switch it up, you know, to kind of challenge your brain to kind of make new connections, because, you know, you want to like learn a new skill or study something that you haven't studied before, you know, learn a new subject, whatever it is, you know, that's the kind of thing that would actually help enhance your brain and help kind of grow it, because it's something that's a little bit different. So, you know, it's kind of a hack, you know, a life hack in a sense, to kind of help build your brain muscle out more. Now, you know, one thing that I mentioned this before, but, you know, kind of paying attention and focusing and figuring out how to be more attentive. You know, so you've got enough sleep now because you heard this podcast about the anatomy of sleep that you thought was excellent, and you said, I'm going to do a better job trying to go to sleep. Then you heard this episode and you're like, I'm going to do a better job trying to go to sleep, because this is the second time that someone told me this. And, you know, I can't remember his name, but he had that Finding Identity podcast. But, you know, you're basically trying to do things that are going to essentially help you, you know, so it's building out the skill set, you know. So if it's like, okay, I need to pay attention a little bit better, then great, I need to figure that out, right? So I got to figure out, well, why am I not able to pay attention enough or whatever, you know, like why do I have a hard time paying attention? You kind of figure that out, and then you can do better in that. So, okay, next I've got a list of things that I'm just going to run down this list because we're getting close to an hour here. Now, meditation is another thing that can help, you know, help with brain health, help you with being able to remember better. But doing meditation, and it doesn't even have to be the kind of meditation that you picture. I need to set aside an hour and go sit in my Zen garden or something like that. But, you know, it could just be that you're doing something in a quiet place at work. You know, you find a quiet location at work and you practice breathing. You practice kind of emptying your mind in a sense. You know, you basically, you kind of get to the point where you're actually find a way to relax and calm down while you're at work or at home. You do it before you go to work, before school, whatever, you know, but you basically have figure out a way to kind of build meditation into your routine. And that's going to help you. Now, what's interesting is there's been studies that say, and these are a couple things. Caffeine has always kind of been something that has, I guess, like an old vibes tale or something that your grandma might say, you know, drink coffee and it'll make you smarter or help you retain memories. Now, there's nothing that's directly correlating that, but there was actually a pretty extensive study done where they did it over a long period of time, and they were studying some participants where they gave them caffeine pills after they learned something, and they were actually able to show that they could recall or they had retained that information a lot better than people who didn't, you know, when they did a blind study, people who that didn't actually ingest the caffeine pills, they didn't do as well because they essentially tested them after the fact. And so that was something that kind of pointed to maybe there's something in caffeine. And what they were speculating was that it was something in caffeine that was kind of waking up your hippocampus. And your hippocampus is that area of the brain that, you know, helps contribute to memory creation and storing information, you know, the short-term memory, stuff like that. So basically, you know, the idea was is maybe the caffeine was doing something to just overstimulate that part of the brain, and that just made it more able to retain the memories or, you know, whatever was learned. So that was kind of interesting. And another thing I saw was another study was that you should eat strawberries or blueberries or berries, and that eating berries after you've learned something is also something that they found evidence in a study that people retain stuff better after eating berries. Another one that I saw was to chew gum. This one was not really a thorough study, but it was a little bit of a study. But another thought was that it's causing other parts of your brain to kind of be active while you're doing something. So it's more helpful to build retention. So, you know, it's possible that all this stuff is related because what you're doing is you're focusing your brain on something, or you're waking your brain up and you're making your brain start to pay attention, you know, and it's not just going into sleep mode while you're listening to an instructor drone on, you know. It's like these activities are trying to just get you to be more attentive, you know, which is possible. So the last one, which I thought was kind of funny, was, well, it's not funny. Actually, the gum one was kind of the funny one, but, and this one seems kind of another one that maybe seems obvious, but they had done another test where they had people take naps after learning something. So some took naps and some didn't. And what they found was the people who took naps retained the information better. So again, it's just one of these things where it, you know, it seems to be stuff that's contributing to a healthy brain is what's involved. Although the caffeine kind of throws that off because caffeine doesn't seem like it's necessarily healthy, but but in itself, in moderation, like acceptable, you know. I mean, I need it like every day in order to function. And I think a lot of people do, but I kind of, you know, often I'll get it in the form of my vitamin water energy that I'm somewhat addicted to, or wholly addicted to, because I have one every day. But there's caffeine in that. But I really probably do better if I'm listening to podcasts and drinking it than if I'm just listening to music. Although that was also another thing that was said. I saw briefly that, you know, listening to music also helps start to stimulate the brain. But then, you know, you have to pick the right music. And you also have to kind of figure out when to turn it off, because it also could be a distraction. So, moral of the story is... Oh, wait, I can't remember. What was the moral of the story? Oh, wait, yes. If you want to enhance your memory, you should follow some of these techniques. You know, more or less, it's focus, you know. And I think it's also having the desire to do this, you know, with everything that is out there that's going to help you become better. It's having that will and desire to do it, you know, and to actually sit down and focus on it. So that's often the most important part, is you got to kind of want to do it. So if you don't, then why waste your time, you know? But if you want to try to enhance your brain, then there's some techniques here that might be useful. So that's all I'm going to say, because I can't remember if there was anything else I was going to say. There might have been. I was thinking about bringing up, you know, memory loss or Alzheimer's, but those kind of feel like they probably belong in their own episodes and a little bit trickier to cover. But this one was about memory, and I hope you remember what I've said in this episode. But the beauty of this is you could actually pause it and rewind it and fast forward it, replay it over and over and over until you go crazy. So I hope that happens, because that meant that you listened to the podcast, and yay for me. All right. This was another episode of Finding Your Identity, and thank you for joining. And I hope to find you listening again to the next episode. And until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. Have a good one.